This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
Hello, and welcome to the third edition of Sound Blast, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's iPod, the totally non-visual magazine. I'm Sandy Simpson, and I'm right here in Bowness in central Scotland with the indefatigable David Bytheway, the editor, producer and roving reporter for Sound Blast. We'll be hearing from David a little later when he goes exploring in Mike Jodelock's steam locomotive sound archives. But first, we have a feature on a diesel locomotive which entered service when steam was still a major mover of British trains. March the golden jubilee of the entry into large-scale service of what were called the English Electric Type 3s 50 long years ago, locomotives which younger generations have learned to love as the Class 37. The origin of the design is to be found in the modernisation plan for what was then called British Railways, where a need was identified for a number of Type 3 locomotives of power output in the range 1500 horsepower to 1999 horsepower. English Electric had already been successful with orders for a smaller Type 1 and larger Type 4 diesel, and had produced locomotives of similar power to that which was required for railways in East Africa. A design based on the exported locomotives was put forward and accepted. The design was for a general-purpose locomotive, which first saw service on the eastern region of British Railways, but was to find favour across much of the network as the 1960s unfolded. The Class 37 locomotives were built in English Electric's Vulcan Foundry at Newton Le Willows and by Robert Stevenson and Hawthorns of Darlington. 309 locomotives were produced in total, originally numbered D6700 to 6999 and 6600 to 6608, their bodywork bearing a strong family resemblance to other English Electric designs of the time. Just into this celebratory year, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society held a special gala day, on January 2nd to be exact, when the deep growl of working tractors shattered the peace of the dormant West Lothian countryside. The active locomotives that day were Bowness-based 37025 and 37175, direct rail services 37423, West Coast Railways 37685, and the Ruston 906 Group's 37906, which is based on the Severn Valley Railway. David, by the way, who else hitched a lift in the trailing cab on one journey?
I'm Andrew Harper. We're travelling in the back cab of our Class 37, 37175, on a return trip from Bowness to Manuel. There's a locomotive on each end of the trains today. Makes things much easier to operate. It means you don't have to swap the locomotive from one end to the other, for example. We've just left Matt Burkill Station, the halfway point on the line, and we're heading back downhill. Because the loco is just being dragged, it's quite quiet. You can actually probably hear me speak, for example. When it's working for real, you'll be drowned by the noise of the engine, I suspect.
What's the significance of this class of engine? Why is it so important in railway history?
Well, Class 37s are perhaps the diesel equivalent of the Black 5 steam engine, for example. A very numerous and very versatile style of locomotive. Hundreds of them were built, and indeed lots of them are still operating 50 years after they were introduced. They worked everywhere in Scotland, doing passenger trains, goods trains, and all sorts of other things to do with the maintenance of the railway, and are still used just now for excursion traffic, nuclear flask trains, special goods trains and so on.
But when you come into here from a steam engine, the difference must have been quite stunning for the old steam engine drivers.
I think it would be, let's say, chalk and cheese or some other such analogy. In here you've got a nice warm and hopefully, if the heaters are working, comfy foot plate seats to sit on, knobs to twiddle, buttons to press, and that's really all that you do, as opposed to having some steam engine to keep fed with coal, water, and watch out for other important details.
Take us through the controls. What can you see in front of you? What can the driver is facing?
There are some basics, which are the throttle and the brake for the train. There's more gauges, for example, than there are in a steam locomotive, indicating the pressures in your brake system, the amps that are flowing into the traction motors, the locomotive speed, and reservoir pressures and things like that. There's also, obviously, a little handle that makes it go either forward or reverse or stop.
Is it easy to drive?
I just said it was relatively easy to drive, but you have to be aware that you're potentially controlling a very heavy train. I have to keep it under control, observing the speed limits at all times and other necessary details.
I'm on the platform now and surrounded by a group of enthusiasts with cameras and recording equipment, and I've got two people here. Can you tell me why the Class 37 is so important?
Scottish local in general.
Got interrupted there, but can you tell me again why it's so important?
Just being a famous Scottish local.
The Class 37?
Yeah, being brought up with it.
But 37's mean a lot, because we live in Inverness, north of Scotland, and that's where I saw them first running.
And what does it? What memories do you get today?
Just the power of them, when the thrash, as we call it in the trade, when they're climbing, they just give it the revs, and it's a fantastic sound.
Here it comes now, could you?
It's on level here, you don't get it here, it's got to be climbing and pulling.
Mm-hmm. And you look at it and see it coming in, what do you remember? What do you feel?
Well, I like the shape of it, the way it's made. The shape of it and the noise. The traction is the engine noise. Mm-hmm. The noise of the engine.
Here it comes, just passing a signal box. We'll stop now. Thank you. Listen to it coming by.
And 37175's farewell cry leads us into a voyage through time, for we are returning to an earlier age to sample Mike Yodeluk's archive of steam recordings.
Hello, this is the morning pickup goods I've recorded here, leaving Thornton, heading for Lookers, and it's in the yard at Cooper, and it's shunting wagons, so listen out for the wagons being shunted. So that was 65921, a Class J38, on the morning pickup goods in Cooper and Fife. That was back on the 21st of September 1966. So now we move forward to the next recording. It's a Class B1, 61330, and it's heading up the gradient at Dunfermline in Fife. Didn't that sound lovely? You could hear the side rods slapping away there as it came up the gradient from the motive power depot to Dunfermline Upper Station. So now we move to Lochmuir on the Markinch Bank, and here we've got a WD Austerity climbing the bank at 9:24 on the 9th of December 1966. Hope you enjoyed that dip into my sound archives. Listen out for the next batch in the future.
Many thanks for sharing these memories, Mike. Now, Willis Pickard takes us even further back in time, to the mid-19th century, in fact, to tell us about The Member for Scotland, which just happens to be the title of Willis's new book, published by John Donald, a division of Berlin, at £20.
Hello, my name is Willis Pickard, and I've been writing a book called The Member for Scotland, which is the life of Duncan Maclaren, a distinguished politician in Scotland in the 19th century. One of his interests was in railways, and during the great railway boom of the 1840s, he was involved in the administration of one or two of the railway companies, including the Edinburgh Glasgow Company. But more particularly, he was invited to look into the scandals that were taking place in some of the companies in the north of England, particularly those that were run by George Hudson, the railway king, who was a fraudster, there's no question about it. And Maclaren, with his expertise as an accountant and a man of figures, led the way in investigating some of these scandals. But at the same time, he was fascinated by railways. In fact, he was sorely tempted when the boss of one of the other railway companies asked him to come and be the chief manager of this company, which would have meant going to Manchester, giving up his draper's business in Edinburgh and relocating to a completely new way of life in Manchester. He was sorely tempted, but he decided that he'd seen enough of all the difficulties of running railways, and by that time the immediate railway mania was declining. And the prospects were less obviously good. So he decided that running a draper's shop and investing in property development in the expanding suburbs of Edinburgh was a surer way to make money.
And that brings us to the end of this fourth edition of Soundblast. The roving reporter, editor, director and producer has been David Bytheway, who invites us to find out more about the Scottish Railway Preservation Society and the Bowness and Kinneil Railway at www.srps.co.uk. From me, Sandy Simpson, from David, and from everyone here at Bowness, farewell till we meet again.